You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm Ryan Stacey. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, October 20th, 2016.
I can't believe that this is happening right now. I can't believe we're at McDonald's drive-thru. They're out of chicken, and we have to get hamburgers.
Filmmaker J.R. Beersmith talks about making a documentary telling the stories of Somali soccer players. That's later in the show in today's episode of Big Talk.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks what Bloomington thinks about the sexual assault allegations against Donald Trump. But first, these local headlines.
Plans for a 746-bedroom student housing complex to replace Dunhill Apartments were stalled again last night by the Bloomington City Council. CA Ventures and RCR Properties are developing the complex on 6 acres located at 17th and 18th Streets, just west of Indiana University Stadium. They are petitioning the city to rezone the site to planned unit development, or PUD zoning, which would allow for 50 units per acre. The project's density and its associated parking issues continue to cause concern for area residents and some council members, including council member Dave Rollo.
Garden Hill is so significantly impacted that really the level of desperation of the residents there is palpable. And I think that it is linked, and really it requires us to pay attention to it because, we're talking about an increase, a doubling of density in this project.
Garden Hill is a historic Bloomington neighborhood with houses dating back to the 1890s, some of which are owned by retirees. Speaking against the proposed complex, Bloomington resident Phil Worthington asked the council to appeal to Indiana University to build more on-campus housing.
The city council had no jurisdictional authority over Kyoto Protocol, war with Iran, universal health care, but that didn't stop the council from drafting proposals to deal with those issues. When we ask you, actually beg city council members over the years to draft an appeal calling for IU to build more on-campus housing, council members always say the same thing: IU is not our jurisdiction. Now, that indicates to me a town that has been taught over the years to empathize with the university's needs before its own.
Bob Baird, vice president of the Garden Hill Neighborhood Association, also spoke against the development.
Such ruthless, insensitive massing, concentration, and congestion works counter to creating diverse, safe, civil, inclusive, and sustainable environments of which we all can be proud.
Baird describes students as noisy, marauding partiers who provoke car alarms and cause a range of property damage. Baird said the council needs to safeguard its core neighborhoods. Carrie Slough of the Neighborhood Association said the organization recognized the need to redevelop the site, but is concerned about overdevelopment. She urged the council not to approve the rezoning request.
You say you support diversity. You say you support sustainability. It's time to walk the talk. This is not diverse, and it's not sustainable.
Councilmember Steve Volan is proposing the creation of a parking commission to address parking issues across the city. With regard to Garden Hill, Volan said, it's time to create an effective neighborhood parking zone.
People park there during events willy-nilly. They park on all the streets. They park in people's yards. And they do so also on weekends and at night. And what Garden Hill has been saying is, we don't just need a neighborhood parking zone. We need one that is enforced during those times, evenings, weekends, and special events.
Volan said a meeting has been scheduled for next Tuesday with representatives from the city's police and planning departments and the mayor's office to work through logistics. Council members were divided on whether to delay the approval of the rezoning request to allow for a neighborhood parking zone to be created. Speaking on behalf of the developers, attorney Mike Carman said the council had plenty of time to solve the parking issues.
I just want to make it clear, and I think most of you realize it, but the planned occupancy of this project would be August of 2018, 21, almost 22 months from now. I would suggest that if there's an issue regarding a parking zone in Garden Hill, which I think there is, I think some representatives here tonight, I think you'll find that we would support that effort. But that's within your control. And to put a nexus of your action here tonight on what you would then do or ever get around to doing with regard to the parking zone is within your control and not ours.
After examining the project for 2 hours, council members Volan and Rollo, Isabel Piedmont-Smith, and President Andy Ruff said they still had enough questions to warrant postponing a vote. The council will take up the project and the rezoning request again in a special session on November 9th.
Three organizations are sponsoring a series of workshops to help local businesses learn how to become contractors for the City of Bloomington or other governmental agencies. The City of Bloomington, the Small Business Development Center, and Ivy Tech's Gail and Bill Cook Center for Entrepreneurship are offering workshops that are open to the public. The first workshop happened today. The second, on October 27th, will focus on bonding, licensing, and insurance. And the third, on November 3rd, will cover banking concepts. The final workshop, on November 10th, will explain the ins and outs of registering as a government contractor. All workshops will be held at the Ivy Tech Indiana Center for the Life Sciences in Bloomington and take place from 4 to 6 p.m. The workshops are free, but registration is required. And more information can be obtained by calling Tara Cromer at 812-330-6261.
45,000 Indiana residents who are currently buying individual health coverage may be eligible for Affordable Care Act ACA premium tax credits to finance their insurance. That's according to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Coverage is available to purchase through the federal health insurance marketplace. A recent Commonwealth Fund survey found that only 52% of uninsured adults were aware that financial assistance is available through the marketplaces. Consumers may be eligible if their income is less than $100,000 for a family of four. In fact, some consumers of marketplace insurance would be likely able to pay less than $75 a month. Open enrollment begins on November 1st and lasts until January 31st, 2017. Health coverage can begin on January 1st if enrollment is completed by December 15th, 2016. Consumers are urged to shop the marketplace at healthcare.gov.
The federal government announced this week that Social Security payments will increase by 0.3% next year. The increase is due to a mandated annual cost of living adjustment tied to the Consumer Price Index. The adjustment affects around 70 million Americans nationwide. Indiana has just fewer than 130,000 Social Security recipients. The average Social Security payment is about $1,200 per month, so next year's cost of living adjustment adds up to an average of only about $4 per month. This year saw no increase, and the annual cost of living adjustment has not exceeded 2% since before the recession in 2008. Falling gasoline prices and a sluggish economy have kept the consumer price index from going up, which in turn has kept the adjustment low. The same announcement also said that Medicare Part B premiums will rise next year, likely wiping out any of the benefits of the cost of living adjustment. For most retirees, Medicare premium increases cannot exceed the adjustment, but that protection does not apply to higher income retirees and some new enrollees. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Ryan Stacey. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
The Somali Civil War is only now winding down after raging across the Horn of Africa for 30 years. A generation of young people have grown up amid the horrors there. Two of them, Saad Hussein and Sadiq Mohammed, have managed to become world-class soccer players, even after the sport was outlawed for a time. Filmmaker J.R. Byersmith has followed their journey to escape the violence in Somalia and to come to the United States to play the game they love. Byers Smith's documentary, Men in the Arena, is being shown on college campuses and in film festivals around the country. It will play Wednesday, October 26th at the Busker Chumley Theater, the day after Sadiq's St. Louis University team faces the Indiana University Hoosiers. J.R. Byers Smith and the film's local promoter, Tyler Ferguson, join Michael Glapp on this week's edition of Big Talk.
Hi, this is Big Mike, Michael Glapp, and this is Big Talk. I have two guests today, one in studio, Tyler Ferguson.
Hi, Mike. Nice to see you.
Hi, and the other on the telephone from L.A., J.R. Byers Smith. You had to kickstart fund this, Kickstarter.
I needed to do about four of those. But yeah, we did. We did one of those about 2 years ago.
This is the story of a couple of young fellas, one of them 22-year-old, the other 20-year-old. Saad Hussein, did I say his name correctly?
You did.
And Sadiq Muhammad. Where they grew up, Somalia, has been engulfed in a civil war since 1986. And somehow these fellas have become tremendous soccer players. And now, apparently, they're in the United States of America. And I think you had a lot to do with that, JR.
There's an entire generation of young people that have a choice where they can pick up a pen or pick up a gun. And Saad and Sadiq represent young people that have tried to do it the right way. And when you have complete anarchy in a place like that, and there's no, and the government's trying to come back for the first time in 25 years, I felt like it was a really important time to kind of shine a fresh light on that journey. And, you know, if you don't have role models, if you don't have heroes, what are you supposed to do?
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't these Al-Shabaab fellows, didn't they outlaw soccer?
You know, in the regions that they were able to control, they completely outlawed a lot of things, soccer, music, all the kinds of cultural things that allow you to be human.
Now, apparently, Saad Hussein, he was held by Al-Shabaab for about a week at one point, and then they did a public whipping of him, as I understand it. Is that true?
Yeah, it is. And I think when we first met Saad and Sadiq, when we met the Somali national team when they compete in this annual tournament in neighboring Kenya, we kind of got wind of, you know, that had happened to him. And it was right before they tried to qualify for the World Cup. You know, and then 3 weeks later, he was supposed to play in that game. And so to think of the talent that is potentially on the field without the resources and that those kinds of things are happening in the background, I think it's so humanizing to think about that's the struggle that a player went to just to get on the pitch, just to get on the field.
What specific things did you have to do to bring these fellows over?
Sadiq is a complicated story to understand, but essentially he was invited for a tryout here in the U.S. and on a one-year visitor visa, and at the time he was playing for one of the top clubs in Kenya, so we just assumed that he would go back, you know, right back if it didn't work out. Well, circumstances led to another. He ended up down at FC Dallas, and now he's still here because of his role in the film.
Mm-hmm.
But Saad, he was a whole different thing, and that's a crazy story too, but essentially the short of it is that he was in Mogadishu, Somalia, the capital city, playing for one of the best league teams there and for the national team. And we realized, okay, we have to get him out. And before we can release the film, we have to find a way to get him out. And what does that conversation look like? That requires many, 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 many sleepless nights of figuring out, who do I know in the world where we can find this kid safe soil? So I was calling coaches all over the world trying to figure out if we could get him a tryout, and then you can't get him out of the country because he can't even get a ticket. There's not an embassy to go to. So it really became this international thing of who do I know, who could we get support from to share the story, to try to find them safe soil. And it just so happens that working with the UNHCR back in Kenya and the embassy there and folks we knew on the ground, and we got some folks here from the Aspen Institute and the U.S. State Department and several senators involved got wind of the story. And it really just became this collective effort over a year to vet his story, to make sure that this is really what happened to him. And part of why his story is so special is when kids get recruited online by the ISIS of the world, etc., Saad is the living proof that they're terrible people.
Yeah.
And they do really terrible things. And we felt like his bravery in sharing his story in the film, you know, also it's his dream too. Like, he wanted to play soccer somewhere else, or at least have a chance at a life somewhere else. So there was many, many, many conversations about, are you sure this is what you want to do? Are you sure this is the sacrifice you want to make? And we never dreamed it would be in America. And sure enough, now they're both in St. Louis, Missouri, which is crazy.
You know, Tyler, how did you get involved? Do you know this fellow JR in any way, shape, or form? Please explain.
Well, I do know JR. I was JR's babysitter back in the 80s. And
he's a youngin.
He is, yeah. Well, much younger than I am. And so our families were very close. And it was not only was I his babysitter, but I knew all of his aunts and uncles and his grandparents and his mom. And, you know, it was the kind of family relationship where we would spend Christmas Eve over there or something like that. So that's the kind of closeness that our family shared. And still do. And JR contacted me a couple of years ago when he was trying to figure out how to get Sadiq into the country. And he said, hey, you know, you've got some soccer connections. Can you help? And I said, you know, of course, me being me, I was like, yes, absolutely. I'm going to get this done. And I really wanted to be, you know, the hero that got it done for Sadiq, and that didn't happen, but that's okay because JR and I got to talk a lot and share a lot, and I became very involved and invested in the story, and watching Sadiq's progress and seeing now that he is playing soccer at St. Louis University, me being a huge IU soccer fan, I know that that's one of the biggest games of the season for me is when Indiana University plays St. Louis University in soccer. And so when I looked at the schedule and saw the date, I contacted JR and I said, hey, you need to come to Bloomington. We need to see Sadiq play if he gets to travel with the team, if he gets to go to the game. And let's make a time out of this. And then the more I thought about it, I was like, wait a minute. This is a soccer community. This is a soccer town. I'm a soccer person in this town. You know, I've got some soccer credentials in this town. Let's bring the movie here and let's just make a time of it.
JR, I recall reading a piece that mentioned that when these two fellows came to the United States, the day they arrived, one of the two of them, and I forget which, you probably remember, was so hungry, and it was after midnight, that he eventually wound up at a McDonald's and loaded up on McDonald's hamburgers. Do you recall that piece that I'm referring to?
It's one of many nights in this journey that I literally, step by step, can remember. Sports Illustrated sent a reporter to come in, and we all met at the airport, and, you know, with Saad and Sadiq, or it was Sadiq and my family and all in St. Louis. I live in L.A., but everybody in St. Louis, we all went to the airport. You know, this has been, you know, 9 months in hiding in Nairobi, and he was here. He was on safe soil. Saad and Sadiq are hugging in the airport. We hopped to take Saad back to his apartment, and he's starving. Like, he's been so nervous for 2.5 days that he hasn't eaten anything. And Sadiq, by the way, did the same thing when he came to America, just so scared, so nervous that they don't eat or drink anything just because they get so nervous.
Wow.
We ended up, you know, it was about 12 o'clock at night at that point, and we're just driving aimlessly around not the best parts of St. Louis, trying to find a place that's open, and we ended up in the McDonald's parking lot at the drive-thru. It's kind of like, I can't believe that this is happening right now. I can't believe we're at a McDonald's drive-thru. They're out of chicken, and we have to get hamburgers. Because that's all we want is chicken.
The movie is Men in the Arena. It's going to be shown at the Buskirk Chumley Theater, and that's going to be Wednesday, October 26th at 7 p.m., Now, where can you get tickets, Tyler?
You can get tickets at the Buskirk Chumley Theater box office, or you can just go on the buskirkchumley.org website and buy the tickets right online.
Documentary director J.R. Byersmith, Tyler Ferguson, thank you both for being on Big Talk.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mike.
You can hear that episode of Big Talk with Mike Glab, as well as all other WFHB news features online at WFHB.org.
Support for WFHB comes from Monster Digital Marketing, offering digital marketing solutions for small businesses. Monster Digital Marketing websites are built for search engine optimization with both the desktop and the mobile device user in mind. Located at monsterdigitalmarketing.com or on the phone at 317-567-1197.
Support also comes from Growing Opportunities, a social business project of the South Central Community Action Program. Growing Opportunities is an urban hydroponic farm that provides job training opportunities for low-income people with barriers to employment, especially people with disabilities. They grow produce that is sold to local eateries, supermarkets, hospitals, and schools. Information available at 812-332-3000. 632-2168 or online at inscap.org.
And up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
This week on Voices in the Street, trouble for Trump, sexual allegations arise. Recently, the Republican presidential candidate, Donald J. Trump, has come under fire for lewd remarks made in 2005. He was caught on tape bragging about inappropriate behavior towards women. Voices in the Street hit the streets to ask your friends and neighbors how they feel about Mr. Trump's behavior and how they would view a Trump presidency.
I find it vulgar and disgusting, and that is absolutely the antithesis of what our country should have as a representative. We should be embracing diversity, women's rights, equality, and all of the progressive notions that all of our generation embrace.
It's disgusting. He is basically a criminal in pretty much every way you can be one, and he doesn't seem to understand how America works. So, I think if we elect Donald Trump, then the experiment, the great experiment of democracy is over.
Well, yeah, I think if we elect an openly misogynistic, openly racist, and openly corporate interests only need apply president, that's not a president. We've just elected a leader of a corporation, and I think that will pretty much end the concept of democracy in America as we know it.
I would never vote for him at all. The whole idea he's even running is beyond the pale, you know.
As a matter of fact, we're going right now to hopefully vote and make sure that he doesn't get into office.
That's why I'm voting for Gary Johnson. Ain't no dirt been coming up like Hillary or Trump, you know, so I just feel more comfortable. I mean, it's really slim pickings.
Well, unfortunately, I think they've both done some pretty negative things, and it makes voting very difficult.
I wouldn't. No. I couldn't. You know, that's an abomination right there, I think. You know, to take advantage of somebody when they're weak, no. I couldn't vote for them like that.
Oh, I think they're disgusting, but then he's disgusting. I mean, he's a spoilt brat and a narcissist and had a very wealthy father who probably treated him badly. And so he's grew up in a rather dysfunctional family and he's continued to be completely dysfunctional. How he ever ended up being a nominee for one of the major parties of this country is just it's a laughingstock, actually. And everywhere else is looking at America and saying, what? And, you know, and yet the GOP allowed it to happen.
I don't like the other one any better.
Well, I think Bill Clinton is somebody who's guilty or appears to be guilty of multiple sexual assault. And his wife is an enabler. So I think they're both monsters. I won't vote for either of them.
I despise Donald Trump. On many grounds, that's one of them. His attitude towards immigrants, his attitudes towards science, his attitudes towards Jews. In every respect, he's a despicable human being.
I feel... That's a weird question, but I f***ing hate that guy. How's that for a soundbite?
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Kathy Norton and Jared Dill, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Voices in the Street was produced by Kelly Worley. Our engineer today is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, this is Ryan Stacey.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program. And if you use iTunes, you can have the show delivered directly to your device. Just go to the iTunes store and search for WFHB Daily Local News, then subscribe to our podcast.
Stay tuned for Blooming Out, Indiana's only LGBTQI public affairs show, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.